in a Japanese action, there is a lot of pause. There is a lot of pause. You have it, it's like some pictures moment, you know. Even if it's really short, you have to have clearly that image. It can be when you have a blocking. It can be when you punch, and you have to tell the story in the fight like this. And it's completely different when you fight in a Hong Kong mode. You have to move very fast, and even if you put some pose somewhere, it's not at the same place. It can have a huge contrast between those way to fight. Also, in the Japanese way to move, I would say a huge part of the way to move, it's acting body.
This week on Action Talks, I'm excited to talk to Samuel Keffi Abri, who is a stuntman, a fight coordinator, and a second unit director based out of France, who got his start in Japan. And he's known for films like The Princess, Fury, and Furies. Sam, thanks for being on Action Talks. I'm really excited to talk to you, man.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
So where would you say that your journey began? I've watched a lot of your recent work, but you have a very interesting... you have an interesting beginning of your career, starting in Sentai in Japan. But where would you say that your career really started in entertainment?
When I start to earn money with the most thing that I like, I mean stunt and fight, it was in Japan. Until that time, I was in France. Training, just only training, practicing, try to polish all martial arts that I approached at the time. Until 19, I was on, it was only for me practice martial arts, train gymnastic, and try to shoot with some friends that that I have around me, some fight sequences with the poor camera that we had at the time. It was only like that until 19. And after 19, I decided to go to Japan because I had no much connection in France to start in this business, you know, and I don't wanted to stick with someone if it doesn't feel right, you know. I'm not a guy like that. Then, but from my 17, I guess, because I was already hooked by Japanese culture since my maybe 12 or 13. Since my 17, I started to learn Japanese by myself, and in generally. I'm self-taught. I like to educate myself in many fields, and I started to learn Japanese beside my studies by myself. And also I went to school because I needed to have a strong base in Japanese before to went there. I don't wanted to be in a bad position after you arrived in Japan. And after.
Let me ask you. So you're bringing up something interesting. So you're talking about how you grew up watching some of these films growing up. You saw Japanese films there in France. What was it that kindled your interest in Japanese films? Was there an anime or a movie?
Oh, it was 100%. It was anime, Japanese animation. Because in France around the 90s. We had the chance to watch lot of different Japanese anime, and at that time it was in French, and when I started to watch and appreciate all that stuff, I was only 12, and after maybe 1 or 2 years around my 14. With some of my friends, I started to understand that all that stuff come from Japan. And when I started to watch the original version in Japanese, and I started to hear the sound of this amazing language, I was totally hooked about that. And the wave of the sound just hooked me a lot at the time. And I just realized that I have to learn Japanese. There is no way. And I started also to buy a lot of OST. I mean, the song of the anime that I liked at the time. It was in Japanese, of course. And I knew at that time, in some way, sooner or later, I have to go to Japan. And about the action, it was another stuff because. Yes, I used to watch a lot of Japanese animation during my childhood. But at the French television, we were very lucky because we also had a lot of series, a show Uchu Keiji. It's a metal hero, and it comes from Toei. You know, it's another branch, another lineage of Sentai Mono and Kamen Rider. It's about some hero with the armor, you know, and we had the chance to have this program at the TV as a TV show, and also before Power Ranger, we had also at the French TV the original Sentai series with the Japanese actor but. Everything was doubling in French, and until Power Rangers was popular in France, we already knew that kind of series because we had that the original ones at the TV, and I was fascinated about that already.
Were there any French action films that inspired you, or was it, you know, you're a Japanese purist now?
No, I'm a Japanese purist. Of course, I knew Jean-Paul Belmondo and some of the action movie that was built in France. I was not too much into it. I was very focused on Japanese shows, animation, but everything. The way of I saw the action at that time changed because I was also fascinated about Hong Kong movie and especially Jackie Chan, because when I was 14, I had a rent video in my neighborhood, and the owner of that shop was a friend of one of my uncles. And one day he just decided to shut down. And I used to rent some of Jackie Chan movie during few years before that. And when he shut down, he told to my uncle, hey, ask to your nephew if he wants some VHS. And my uncle told me that. And I said, wow, are you sure? And I went there with two big bags. And I got almost more than 50 movie. The movie from you know, we had a lot of production like that, like not René Château, but it was the main production that Jackie Chan were involved at that time.
Golden Harvest.
Golden Harvest, yes. Yes, I got this bunch of video at that time, and during maybe 3 years, I watch every day, in the same cycle, all the movies that I had at that time, and doing my training in front of the movie in my room. You know, it was I was hooked about that too, and beside also fascinated by Japanese culture, and at that time I around maybe 17, 18, I had to make a choice because I wanted to become, of course, like Jackie Chan. I wanted to become stunt performer. I wanted to fight like Jackie Chan. And I started to practice martial arts. I started with the Jeet Kune Do. But the point of that is I needed to make a choice because I was fascinated by two fields, Hong Kong action and Japanese culture. And yeah, the balance was more on Japanese culture because the music that I used to hear was Japanese. The anime that I watched was Japanese, and also the Sentai Mono and the Sentai Hero was Japanese, and I just realized that why not to try to go to get Japan, and maybe using at the same time I can use my Japanese, maybe I can do some action there. And yeah,
so when you were now you said that you were doing some indie films, you guys had a, you know, a low rent camera, we all had that. What was inspiring you to make action films? Because you can't make a live action anime necessarily. It's very difficult to do.
When you are young and you have the opportunity to have a camera, even if it's not a very good one, the only way to show what you can do, the skill set that you got, the ability that you get, the only way to show it's to first to shoot it, to record it. And you record that, and after you can show it. And in some way, I was able to farm some software to edit roughly the stuff that I record with some friends of mine at the gym center, and step by step try to replicate some sequence of some movies of Jackie. But at that time, even if I was fascinated about Japanese show, the thing that I tried to replicate was the Jackie Chan stuff. Then I was already, my body already absorbed the way to move like a Hong Kong actor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hong Kong stuntman.
Was that something that you found to be easy because of your martial art training, or did you have to break any martial art habits?
When I started to practice Jeet Kune Do, because that was the first martial art club that I had in my not so far from my neighborhood, was the Jeet Kune Do, and there I learned a lot, but it was far from screen fighting. It was the basic: how to punch, how to kick, how to block, and also, even if I like Bruce Lee, but I tend to replicate what Jackie Chan does, you know. And I learned only the basics, and also in Jeet Kune Do, which is good about the philosophy and everything, because in Jeet Kune Do, the most important is to beat the guy with the most effective way. We don't want too much unnecessary move, you know. And to have a strong base, to know how your body reacts when you punch, when you block, it was good. But it could have been also another martial art at that time, you know, for me.
Let's then go forward to, I want to know about your crew and how you got a team together to make short films back then.
First, you have to have a camera, you know. After you get a camera, as an individual person, especially when you are young, you cannot. It's very limited, the field of the possibility to shoot a shortcut with a story who are enough strong to entertain the people. You know, the only thing that you can shoot as an individual when you have a camera, it's just action sequence. one-to-one. One steal the cell phone of someone and run after and fight. Just that kind of stuff. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I've made that movie 500 times.
Yeah. But after you did many action sequence like that, you edit on your own and you start to get an accurate vision about what is the all possibility that you have in an action sequence. You started to be a specialist in some way. And from the position of some director or young director, oh, they want to become a director. They want to do an action movie. Maybe you can help them, or they can help you to have a more professional crew with the more professional equipment. You can maybe interact with some director's movie and give them the right tools to do some good action sequence in their shortcut. I was in the middle of all that stuff, doing my own action sequence with not a very solid stories, and help the best way I could many directors or young directors that I met at that time to have the best tools to create some effective action sequence, you know.
So when you're doing these short films, because you know, when you have no money and you have a cheap camera and you have a crew that is not being paid,
yeah,
you're not paying anybody. You as a director, as the filmmaker, probably also as a performer, I assume, you have to come up with solutions to problems all the time, right? And yeah, there are various ways that, you know, like the way that I would approach problems is sometimes if it was me on camera, I would usually try and, like, if I wasn't getting a shot, I would just try and keep doing the take, or I would rearrange the composition of the shot. A lot of the time, if I were behind the camera, if we were having problems with the action, I would just cut and do a new angle of an insert, kind of Sammo Hung style. What tips and tricks did you pick up? How were you solving problems, and what inspirations were you drawing from Hong Kong and maybe Japanese cinema too?
First, I watch many movies and many Hong Kong action movies. Most of them was Jackie Chan movies, and I have also a huge respect and admiration about Sammo, because I think he's just an amazing director. He's one of the best action director that I know. The first thing that I got is the rhythm in the choreography, but it's this approach is very personal, because it's just one way to entertain the people. Maybe some people doesn't care about the rhythm, you know. I help lots of young director to get done their action sequence. The first thing that I must to handle at that time is the safety and how, for a simple interaction between two people, how you have to do to make it real. And after, if you can, make it cool, you know. But you started to understand that quite easily. And after, you just get a bit frustrated when you know that this is the only thing that you can give to some young director, because they just want to have an effective sequence, but not an amazing sequence, you know. You cannot do a fight like the fight with Jackie and Benny Jet Orchides for a short film for a random young director. Maybe he will like it, but maybe it doesn't fit with his story, you know. But it's what I wanted to do. Then I had to learn more and more all the mechanism and the grammar that we have when you create a long sequence with a lot of variation of rhythm. And I realized that it's very important for the attention. If you want to have someone sticking on what we have at the screen, you have to create a good rhythm. You don't have to miss that part of the choreography, in my opinion.
So when you were watching, you know, Hong Kong cinema, Japanese cinema, action cinema, I assumed you saw some American action films too, and also French action cinema. Did you notice rhythmic differences between all these different action styles? And can you talk about that?
Yeah, of course. The Japanese shows, I think that they didn't, now it changed a little bit, but they didn't care about the rhythm that much because they like to shoot in a long one shot, almost all that stuff. About the Hong Kong stuff, of course, they create a rhythm and they know exactly how to maintain the attention of the audience by put some punctuation in the middle of this rhythm. Like it could be anything, it could be folds, it could be an original move at that time, but they know exactly how to break the rhythm and to maintain the attention of the audience. About the American movies, of course, we have some exception nowadays. I think they are not focused on the rhythm, especially, and maybe they tend to add a rhythm, maybe unconsciously, in post with the special editing, maybe a quick cutting or sound effect, some stuff like this. But I'm not sure that they think about the rhythm during the beginning of the process when they create choreography, you know.
And what about French action?
Oh, French action. I think French action. It's a mix with American action and maybe some jiu-jitsu or pro wrestler. You know, they like the French fight coordinator, I think, or maybe it's what the producer or director required. They like to struggle a lot, you know. They don't focus that much on the good composition of movement. It's more they approach that in a realistic way more, I think.
Yeah.
And they like to have two people struggle, and if you want to add an amazing ID, maybe you're gonna use the corner of the desk and you will have a huge impact on the head, and after some other guy just jump behind you and push you struggling. We see a lot of movies, French movies, doing that kind of stuff. But it's not all the time the case, of course. It's just the thing that I used to notice sometimes.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, you mentioned the Japanese style that went from that, you know, the very kind of long single takes. It's kind of the Japanese, and I call it the Toei style. And then when you have a shift in some of the Power Rangers and Sentai, because you have alpha stunts that's trained by Kurata, who took the Hong Kong style. And then that probably was the origin of that kind of Hong Kong style of action into Sentai. Yeah. Is that, this is a good segue into your moving to Japan. What was the first project you worked on in Japan? And were you surprised? And what was it like? I mean, it must've been a culture shock to you.
Yeah. when I went to Japan at the first time, I had no idea from where do I start. You know, I was 20, something like this, and I already had a few years martial arts Jeet Kune Do background skill set with me. I also was able to, because I practiced the gymnastic at that time, I was able to do some backflip, front flip, some 360 and 540, some stuff like this. And in Japan, nobody does that at that time. After I did some research in order to know what kind of stunt team, maybe stunt company we have in Japan, I sent a few email to few company. I don't remember the what was the name, but I didn't find at that time Alpha Stunt or I found Jack, and I went there directly and I met one guy because I just wanted to have some information about that. And I just ask what is necessary to train with the in this under this company and maybe work in this field. And the guy tell me, you have to subscribe and stay there 1 year, and only after that you will work. And for my first visa, I was there just for 1 year. I don't wanted to lose much time to train and maybe doing nothing. Then I said, oh, okay, thank you. And I sent another email to another company called Wild Stunt. And they give me an answer and told me, okay, you're a French stunt performer. You want to be a stunt performer? Just come over to see us. And I went there, and the boss of this company, Wild Stunts, was when I get in the office. The boss was there with one of his coworker, and on the wall I had picture of the behind the scene of the French the show that I used to watch in French, the Sentai Mono and Metal Hero. And I was so, wow, it just blew my mind at the time. All that show that I like, maybe some of the people here work on it and used to work on it. I have to stick with them in some in some way. And yeah, just to sit down in the desk, in the room, and the boss, Takanori Shibahara, he was is a man with a huge experience. He did many Sentai series as a stunt double, and also after four or five years to do many Sentai series and Metal Hero, he start to build his company in 1984, and I went there around 2004, something like this. He was already a stunt coordinator during 20 years, something like this. And I just sit down in his office, and he asked me, why are you here? And I just said, I went to Japan because, and hopefully my Japanese at that time was not very bad, was enough good to have a daily conversation. And I just told him, I went to Japan because I want to become a stunt performer. I love those shows. I used to watch it when I was young, since I was younger in France. Is it possible to, what is the deal? Well, how we can subscribe or, and he just told me, are you sure you want to become a stunt performer? We are not hearing that many Gai Kokujin, stranger, want to come in Japan and become stunt performer. And he told me, if you want, I can give you some some address to become a model or some stuff like this, you know. And I said, no, I want to do action. And he just looked at his coworker and he said, okay, let's try. And the next day I was on the training session with some Japanese stunt team, and it was just the beginning of this journey.
So what was the training process that he put his students through? And what did you learn from his method? This is Shibahara you're talking about? Takanori?
Takanori Shibahara.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first day, it was I lose the face, you know, because I think they challenged me because my boss at that time, at the first session, he asked me already, have you ever practiced some screen fighting or some stuff like that? And I said, yeah, I did a lot of shortcut with some friend in France. I practiced Jeet Kune Do, and I had with me a CD with my showreel, you know, all of the stuff that I've done in the training session, also in the gymnastic. And he said, oh, okay. And he asked me, okay, create a choreography with the few guys that he had at that time. And I create a choreography, but it was, the timing was completely off, because I already used to move in a Hong Kong way. I was very fast, nobody couldn't be on my time. And also it's like I was fighting alone, you know. And but because everybody didn't match with me, it's like I was the only bad catch, you know?
Yeah.
And at that time I start to understand that, okay, it's not Hong Kong action here. It's another way to do action. And I have to start from the beginning.
Can you describe that rhythmic difference and the timing difference that you noticed?
In a Japanese action, there is a lot of pause. There is a lot of pause. You have, it's like some pictures moment, you know? Even if it's really short, you have to have clearly that image. It can be when you have a blocking, it can be when you punch, and you have to tell the story in the fight like this. And it's completely different when you fight in a Hong Kong mode. You have to move very fast, and even if you put some pose somewhere, it's not at the same place. It can have a huge contrast between those way to fight. Also, in the Japanese way to move, I would say a huge part of the way to move, it's acting body. It's something that you don't have when you fight, because almost any actors, if you train them more or less, they can fight like an Hong Kong stuntman, you know? But in Japanese, it's not the same way. In Japanese fighting, you have to absorb a vocabulary, a body, because they use this vocabulary body to talk and make sentence when they have a mask. They put a mask on. Because after I did a lot of show on scene. In front of the big supermarket. I started by the Karami, I guess, henchman, you know. When you, after I had also the opportunity to get in among the hero, but at the beginning I was just the smaller shrimp, you know, that kind of stuff. And I started by doing that kind of theater. When you do this, you have a daihon, a script, and when you rehearse. You rehearse the day before you do the scene, the show. All the people have to move according to the dialogue that you hear, you know? And for that, because you have a mask, you have to have enough knowledge and vocabulary to not disconnect the phrase, the sentence that the people hear and the guy who move alone, who moving alone like this. And it was it takes me a few months to get the this way to move. At the beginning, I just move like because I had also some training session, and my boss at that time during the training session put me the mask. He told me, if you do some theater stuff or if you go on set, you have to be able to fight in the mask. And at the beginning, I first, you cannot see nothing. Secondly, it's very hot. And I thought that you when you put a mask, you can see through the glass, but that's not the case. You can see in the middle of the line or the design, because they built it in the wood. Just in case if you fold the mask to make it more stronger, you know. And I started to train with them, and it was very difficult at the beginning, because there is a vocabulary that you have to learn, and you have to learn it on your own. Nobody teach you. They can explain to you roughly that you have to match with the sentence that you're hearing. But after, it's like a language, any language. If you want to have a large vocabulary, it's on your own. You have to read a lot of books. You have to educate and absorb a lot of information. And it's the same.
So, Sam, when you, because you learned Japanese before you did this, good enough at least to have a conversation. Did learning Japanese and the Japanese grammar structure, did you find that helped you understand this movement language?
Yeah, because there is some word like merihari or wabi-sabi. There is some word you cannot explain very well in French or in English. And sometimes, yeah, you have to build a sentence if you want to understand the meaning. But first, definitely, if you don't speak Japanese, it's impossible to integrate, to get in that kind of group. Impossible.
Of course, yeah. There's a vocabulary language barrier, but I mean in terms of the timing, right? Like there's a certain timing associated with this Japanese movement. So even if you're not saying anything verbally, is there a movement that sort of aligns with how Japanese spoken language works? Did you find that there was any kind of overlap?
Finally, why we have this particular way to move in Japan? It may come from animation or theater, you know, because they have a special way to talk. When you talk Japanese at the beginning, now I'm quite fluent in Japan. I'm better in Japanese than English. But when you can speak Japanese very well, the rhythm that you have when you talk, it's not the rhythm that you have when you hear a speech from a manga or movie. At that time, I didn't know the difference. I just thought that Japanese is Japanese, but no. And because you have a certain way to talk in a Japanese movie or Japanese animation, when it comes to a show, they're going to put this way to talk, and you have to apply this way to talk to the move. And that's why I think we have this impact from the language to the body, because when you talk for a show, it's not the same thing when you talk in real life with people. It's the rhythm is completely different. Yeah, it makes sense for you?
Yeah, it totally does. I mean, I see that too in English. The way that I talk, I come from a small town, and the way that I talk to people from my small town is very different than the way that I would talk to somebody from LA. LA, it's a very different kind of way of, it's a different cadence, right? So LA style talking is very media based, I would say. Like, there's a very standard way that you talk in media, and that must be the same. It must be the same within Japanese culture, because you're trying to make media that is broader. I don't know. I wonder what your thoughts are on that too.
But I mean the different way to talk. It's more the contrast is more when you have an actor, Japanese actor, who act when he talk in Japanese, and when you have the people who talk in real life, you have a huge contrast actually. Maybe you have a few movies, but yeah, if you just look at the Japanese animation, when you have a character who talk in Japanese, nobody talk like this in real life. And if you replicate that kind of character on show, you have to move in certain way.
Yeah, fascinating. So, okay, so now talk about the how then this works out for you. You worked on Ultraman, Kamen Rider, Fighting Demons, worked on a lot of shows out there. How did you develop this skill over time?
Each time I've got to work, I passed through a lot of difficulties, and you just improve your skills for the next one. What was surprised me a lot when I started to move in that kind of suits with mask, I just realized that the Japanese stunt performer are just incredible, because I didn't know what it was possible to move and do action, do a long sequence without seeing nothing. And no, I swear, I do 50 more than 50 episodes in a suit in a Chinese Sentai series, but the main crew was Japanese, and I was one of them. And when you stand, you can see your environment when you are positioning, when you have your opponent. But as soon as you start to move, you don't understand where you are, and you don't understand when you live. And you just have to expect, you just have to deliver your performance and your choreography, and you have just to pray to have the people around you will be on the right timing. That's it. That's it. And it's the same when you because we used to do a lot of acrobatic stuff on the Trump, mini Trump. And it's the same when you have a mask, you have to do it without seeing nothing. It's just, you have to memorize, you have to understand perfectly the movement, and know that if you apply a certain energy in your movement, in your jump, in your rotation, you must land well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a second level gymnastics.
Yeah, and I got that skills in Japan. It took me almost 1 year. I just thought how the those guys can do the crazy stuff like this. I was just so fascinated and admirable.
After your work in Japan, what came next?
After I work in Japan, I go there back and forth during a few years according to the project that I had. I at that time, I just realized in Japan, if you want to become success, you have to give your all there. And you, because financially in Japan, you know that there are not many budgets. And as long as you're not on top, because at that time, maybe now it's changed, more people work as a freelance, but at that time you couldn't work as a freelance. You have to choose a team, and the production call this team, and you receive the work from your boss. That's it, because the system at that time works like that. If you want to have the trust, the production cannot trust a people individually. They have to pass through a team with the past, with a resume, to make sure that the people that your boss suggests, recommend to for the job was okay. And yeah, at that time, because I was also a beginner, even if I had a lot of opportunity to work and had an amazing experience, I still have a beginner at that time. And as long as you're not on the top of the cats, the dog, you know, you have to, almost all the stunt has a second job, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I didn't went on set, I just have a small job on restaurant or some stuff like that, you know. And after a few years back and forth to France, according to the shooting that I had, I prefer to put myself and take time to try to make a new connection in Europe, and maybe try to use all the experience that I get in Japan for some other project, like Hollywood movies or some stuff like this, because I don't want to stay too much long time in Japan doing at the same time another job like many stunt performer, until I can maybe be useful. You know?
So so what was your, when do you think that, or what was the project that really kicked off your career in stunts in France?
I started to do a lot of show in some, you know, at, like a Disneyland, you know, stunt show. And by doing this, you make a lot of connection, because the people who do some stunt show expect also to work on set, to be on set. Then after I spent 2 years on this stunt show, I started to make connection and to have a few projects in France as a stunt double or just a henchman, you know. And but all the time, it was not very, I don't want to say interesting, because I learned a lot from the process of the creation of the sequence and about the equipment and everything. But like you, I just couldn't do what I wanted to do, is to create action sequence, build choreography, and maybe when you, sometimes you just have a director who does the thing that it could be better if you were at this position, you just have to assume that and to stay back. And yeah,
what was it like for you going from Japan and learning this very specific kind of movement language, and then coming to France and applying that to your stunt work in France? How did that work out?
I already was able, because before I went to Japan, I had my skill set in Hong Kong moves. And after I got also the skill set in Japanese move, I was able to switch.
It's like then going from one language, it's like going English to French to whatever, right?
Yeah. It was not a problem at that time. And also it served me a lot after, when I start to become a fight choreographer and action director. I will tell you later on. But yeah, I was able to switch, then it wasn't a problem for me. And also in France, except some Luc Besson movies, and also if you are not the main actor, you have not much to do. It was not very difficult if you compare when I shot in China, Shanghai, during almost 4 months, more than 50 episodes of this Sentai series as a Green Ranger. I just worked constantly 6 days a week. 6 days a week. We had only the Sunday. Every day you wake up at six. When you finish your work, it's when the light goes down. around six, you arrive to the hotel at 7 or 8, and after you have to go to drink with the Japanese stunt team and the Chinese stunt team, and you arrive to your room maybe around 11:30, and maybe you have also to fix your suits on by yourself, because at that time the budget was not so high, and you have to do this every day during 4 months, and every day you do fight choreography, acrobatic stuff, and also I was surprised because you create on your own. You have the action director who tell you what's going on, where who has to fight who. He just coordinates all the fight. But after, when he put you in the position with some opponent, and he just tell you okay, compose just 5 or 6 moves, and after put just one acrobatic stuff, and that's it. Yeah. And you have to do this every day. It was the most difficult experience in my life, but thanks to that I got my Japanese move list with that.
So you said that working on French films like Luc Besson's films, you have credits on District 13 Ultimatum, No Limit, Lucy. Were you able to apply these things to these jobs, or were these very simple jobs for you?
No, you cannot apply after, you know, in France, if you compare to the Asia cinema or Korean cinema or American cinema, it's not belong to the culture action, you know. If it wasn't Luc Besson, what other action director we have? Not that much. Yeah, then I was lucky to have the opportunity to know the right people, because in this field it works only on the connection that you have. Of course, if you're good in what you do, it's better, but it's also work on the connection that you have and the relation that you have with people. After a few show, few days or few week, as a more or less important part, when you are standable, it's good because you can work few months. When I did the standable of Luke Evans on Fast 6, I was few weeks in London. It was very nice, and we did a good job with the stunt team. It was one of the best experience, because I was able at that time, even if I got face replacement, I was able to fight. I fought Vin Diesel and Paul Walker, but I was able to kick, to punch, and to do some cool move based on the fight coordinator crate. But it was a Hollywood movie. In France, it's sometimes you go on set and you wait until the end of the day to do something, and you do nothing. You know what I mean? and you still have your pad and everything, and you're sweating, and but you have to. Maybe you know that.
I didn't have a very extensive stunt career, but it's that way in Hollywood too, to some extent. But so I wanted to ask you too, because you've doubled quite a few guys. I think, did you double Vincent Cassell as well?
Yeah.
What do you look at as a stunt double? What are you looking at as in the performer? What are you studying, and how do you try and match their movement style?
For me, first, you have to, you cannot go crazy. You have to match with the way to move of the actor that you double. The fight coordinator creates for you some moves, and I think if you are enough aware, you will create some move that your actor is capable to do. And after that, when you apply this move, you also have to see the way he walk, the way he turn his head, the way he does everything. Because if you have too much contrast between the shot with the actor and the stunt double, it won't work, and you just fucked up the work.
I wanted to briefly talk to you about rhythm again. Did you were you ever a musician growing up?
I always used to hear music, especially Japanese music. I sadly didn't have the time to learn piano or guitar, but I wanted. Maybe one day I will have the time for that. But for any reasons, I was able to catch very earlier how the rhythm can work and can have what kind of impact the rhythm can have on the people, and also on the attention that you have. And it's belong also to the editing part. You can also create a rhythm during the editing, but it's another process. Mm-hmm. I'm focused almost all the time on the potential rhythm that I will have in my choreography.
So you continue doing indie films. You have films like Project 7. I remember Tekken Tag Tournament 2. I remember that one coming out around.
Oh, really?
Ah,
I also. Yeah. You remember? I was the showrunner and the stunt double of Dante, the shortcut of Devil May Cry and Resident Evil.
Yeah. So you know, you're working on indie projects at the time, back in France. I assume how are you now applying these skills to your indie projects now?
For me, it's really important to first. You cannot do whatever you want, even if you are in charge of the action of movie. It's not your movie. It's you have to serve the movie. You have to give the best tool that you have in your language to make the best action sequence it can be. But after discussion with the director and to know which direction you want to go, you can have a little bit freedom, and in this field you can create some stuff. For me, as long as it fits with the story, I try all the time to suggest cool ideas, a mix with lot of stuff. For me, if you mix some movement like I used to do, like a Japanese move and maybe pinch axillats, it's a mix that I love a lot and I used to do. As long as it's fit with the story, it can be cool. It works. A mix of something is all the time push you to create, innovate the action, and not to stick with the one style.
On a film like Jason Bourne, for example, and the Bourne Identity gets, from a lot of stunt performers, it gets a bad rap for the shooting and the editing style. I personally am starting to understand why it's possibly done like that, even if it might not be my personal style. When you're working on projects like that, they don't emphasize the movement as much. They emphasize kind of the feeling of the scene. What was it like working on projects like that?
Let's say, if I'm not the director, as a stunt performer, what you wanted to do? You just have to give your best to deliver the best performance that you can do. And of course, we can be agree or disagree about the way that the Bourne series shots. For me, especially, I prefer when you understand what is going on at the screen. If you understand the grammar of the composition of the shot, you should know that you can lost the audience. You can lost the geography of the people in the fight. And if some some director does that, I thought maybe there is a reason, because if it was you, you will shoot the action in maybe a better way. But there is maybe there is some director, they want to just lose you. They just it's maybe their vision. As long as you're not that guy and you don't have a conversation with him, you cannot understand that. It's the conclusion that I had today. Maybe there is some director, they use that technique because they didn't know how to shoot. It does exist, maybe. Maybe also sometimes it's to hide the movement, can be delivery by actors, that you have to do some shaky cam, and after you add sound design and you don't know what's going on, but it's you have a lot of impact, and it can be also this kind of vision exists too. You can fake it or you can do it on purpose. Only the people who does that knows the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I watched District 9 recently, and as I'm watching it, it's like, okay, here's a guy who is not really interested in showing a performance, right? That's not really the point of the action in District 9, but it's sort of this like peak war. It's almost like war journalism style filmmaking, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so good because it gets all the moments right. And there's a lot of editing. There's a lot of shaky camera. It's a style of filmmaking that I love, and I would never be able to replicate it. I can't tell you how to create a Neil Blomkamp style action scene, but I love watching them. Yeah. If you asked me to make, you know, a District 9 style fight, I would just go like, then it's gonna look like rope-a-dope. It's probably not gonna fit. It's gonna be a comedy, right? It won't work very well. I'm with you, and it's a personality type. Maybe it's a language thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, but it's just a suspicious. I think was the first Bourne was about the action scene was a huge success, even if we don't know if Greengrass, right, did on purpose or not. It because about the first, I mean, about the first, the shaky cam. Even if we have a lot of shaky cam, it's still the action, still clear. Until a certain point, you know what I mean? And this way to shoot action was not often until that time, I guess. It's shaky, but also you can sometimes see clearly what Matt Damon does. I think it was a good attempt and good introduction for that kind of style. But if you abuse, if you go too crazy, you have the result that we had after that.
Scott Adkins, when I talked to him, he said, I think he was in Bourne Supremacy. And I said, you were? He said, yeah, I've got a fight in there. You can't even really see anything in that scene, but maybe that was the point. I don't know. I don't know why.
Yeah. But yeah, as I told you, only the person who did that knows the truth. If he did that on purpose, or if he just wanted to cover what he shot, I don't know.
We should ask him.
Yeah.
That's the only way to know. Let's get into your work on The Princess, because as opposed to, you know, these other films you're talking about, The Princess, it's very clear what the environment is. It's very clear where people are. You can see what's happening. You can see the movement. Was this a deliberate decision by the director, or was it something where he said, hey?
No, I work with the Clayton Barber, which is a great man with a lot of experience. He know how to manage a crew very well. And he trusts us about the process of creating action sequences, and of course he has to make sure that we respect the whole story point. Then we had a lot of meeting, a short meeting before each sequences to make sure that we have to respect all the story points. And after our job, the stunt department is to link with the original move, cool moves, all those story points that you have in one sequence. We worked that way on this show. It was a bit hard sometimes because it was long and we didn't have much time. But about the vision of the action, for me personally, I prefer when you can see what's going on at the screen, even if you have to doubling the actors. Of course, the most important is to see the actor does the thing. But if the actor cannot, you have to make a choice. We should we be focused on the action and delivery a good action sequence, or should we be focused on the actress? And even if it's an action movie, we won't see that much the action. We have to make a choice. And I think we find a good compromise. Yeah.
How much of that involved training the actress versus hiding with a double, hiding with camera, and how much of that were you able to contribute to?
Also, according to the second director, Clayton, we try to find the right balance between create good cool moves. It means sometimes moves a little bit complex that you have to do with the stunt double. Also to create some easy move who can be replicated by the actress. We have to find the right balance of that. If you have a right balance, everybody can agree on what we will shot on set, you know.
Yeah.
Because at the end, you have to get an approval from your action director or your director. Everybody has to get approval at the end, you know.
How did you get involved in Fury?
It's a funny story because I was a stunt and a henchman, like a man from the CIA in Jason Bourne, you know? yeah. And I worked with the fight choreographer called Roger Yuan. Oh, yeah, I think you know that. You know, because I watch your shortcut, Blind.
Yeah. I know him. Yeah. I've never seen him before, but I've definitely talked to him. I'm just kidding. That's a blind joke. I keep going, sorry.
Yeah, and he was a fight choreographer at that time, and we've got a good relationship during the training process and on set because I had a small fight with Matt Damon. Everything goes very well. My timing was impeccable. Roger was happy. Matt Damon was happy. Everybody was happy. And it was cool. And after a few months, weeks, I don't remember, in Vietnam, Veronica Ngo, she's an actress, but she's also a producer. She has her own company in Vietnam. She was looking for a fight coordinator for her new movie called Free. She's a friend of Roger. And she asked Roger if you have a guy who can handle this job. And for any reasons, Roger just called me and tell me, I have a friend. It's a Vietnamese actress. She looking for a guy who can create some action sequences in Vietnam. If you want, you can contact her. And I just told him, thank you very much, but are you sure he's okay? He just told me, I'm sure you can do it with the way you move, and I think it will be okay. And that's why he made the link with her, and step by step, I get the contact with her, and we start to work on the prep of Curie.
So what was your vision of the action when you heard the concept?
First, I want to know where the story goes and all the story points that we have in one sequence, because I have to respect to follow the story. And after, I need to know where is my limit, how far we can go. I mean, about the style fighting, the idea that we can put in the choreography as a move. And as soon as I have all this instruction, I start to build my choreography, and some director just tell me, yeah, we can go crazy, do whatever you want. Some other tell me, no, it's more realistic fight, and you cannot do some backflip or some stuff like this. I just want to know the field that I have to work on. Yeah.
Yeah, the canvas, right? I like to say, if you can tell me what canvas size I have, it could be as small as you want, and you can give me one paintbrush, but that gives me the most freedom, is when I know what the canvas is. Veronica is very good physically.
Yeah.
What was the training process for her? Did you bring her through a training process? What was the pre-vis process? Talk about that.
Yeah, we went with three of my friends. At that time, we went to Vietnam, and they organized everything for us. It was just amazing. We had maybe 4 or 6 weeks, I guess, something like this. And for each week, we had one action sequence as a prep. And first we needed to train the stunt people that they already have there. There is some few team in Vietnam, They move well. They can fight well. It's more. It's close to a Hong Kong action, I think. But the way that I wanted to bring the move list was a bit different, because in my old journey, I of course I have the Japanese move sets, also Hong Kong move sets, and also I was fascinated about everything who are close to pench axilat or close quarters combat, and with everything who use gun and knife and all that stuff. And I wanted to do a mix between some close quarter combat and some maybe Japanese influence moves. And it's what I attempt to do. Maybe you can feel it because you're a master of the... the different style of action. To understand that way to move, I needed to bend the skills a little bit of the stunt team there, and then to little bit polish. That's why we had a few training sessions at that time with the whole team, and also with Veronica, which she's very involved in good in what she does, because she has already done at that time two action movies. When you have an actor or an actress who can already move very well, it's just lucky, you know. You can the field of the possibility getting very large. And we create choreography. First, we create choreography. After we finish to create the choreography, I show to the director the previs. We maybe add some modification or adjustment. And as soon as we get the approval, we can put everybody on training and try to follow the previs. The previs, it's a nice tool if you want to save time, if you want to, it helps. Many departments, even if the the VFX to know where you have some injuries, where you have which side you have the blood, the costume and everything. It's a very good tool. After that, in my opinion, you should not stick to the previs that much, because when you train on the training room, when you practice on the training room, you don't have all that the real elements that you will have on set, like the costume, like the real tools or weapons. Maybe you will be affected about that if you don't think outside of the box. That's why on set it can be good to be very flexible, and sometimes you can even have a better idea on set. I was surprised myself to make it better on set that I already edit on previs.
Do you have any examples of scenes in the movie where you had to improvise on set and it came out better than you expected?
Yeah, absolutely. On the freeze, you have a scene when one of the girls just show up and she has in front of her a long corridor with a lot of guys. But before all the guys get in, you have just one guy. And at that time, Veronica told me, okay, she's just a show up and she will confront. She will have just one opponent in front of her. And in the previs, it should be like this. You have one opponent, and after you have all the bad guys join him. And the fight starts with everybody. But she told me, before everybody comes in, can you just add one hit, one kick to this girl on the guy waiting for her? And I say, okay. And I started to think what kind of kick I can add for the beginning of the fight. I don't want to do the dragon kick like a Bruce Lee. It's a bit we see many times, and I just thought about to stick two shots. The first shot will be the girl running, jump, and start to turn in the air to do a 360, and at that time I will put my camera close to her clothes, and after from the other side I will take only a dragon kick. And when you stick together, you have a kick who is impossible to do it in one time. Because she run, she jump, she spin 360, and she finish like a dragon kick with a dragon kick. You're just a bit proud of what you just had, because it wasn't the plan, you know?
The camera style in these films, that's very dynamic. Were you taking inspiration from any filmmakers when you came up with shooting that way?
Yeah, of course. In some way, I must be influenced by many movies that I watch until now. I don't want to say I prefer do a lot of Warner. Warner is good, but anything that you do, if you do the same thing, you get tired. You know what I mean? For me, about the composition of the shots, it's crucial to not repeat the same shot from one shot to another. You have to use your brain and your creativity to get the interest of the audience at each shot. If you just do a reverse, one time, okay, but if you do four times, I think you miss something. In my opinion, at least about the action sequences. That's why I try to innovate all the time when I do the previs, and after try to deal with the DOP and understand if it's possible or not, and if we need to make some adjustment or not. Yeah.
When you're coming up with these action scenes, are you seeing the camera and the edit in your head? And how far along in the scene do you, like, you're sort of imagining the fight, right, as you go? Can you see the whole fight? or what's your process for kind of designing in your head?
It's interesting what you asking me now because I also work with a few of action directors and or fight choreographer, and I also wanted to know if everybody think if everybody have the same process about creating fight choreography, and I realized that everybody has have his own way to build a fight. There is some of fight choreographer, they have roughly the whole fight. I mean, on the about the post-production, they already on the post-production, they have the whole fight, the entire fight. For me,
in their head, you mean they see
yes,
it in their entire head? Yeah.
Yes, in their head. For me, when I create the fight, it's like I already edit in real time in my head, and it's easier than when you've done and you have to deal only with the shot that you've got, because after each shot, you can choose the shot that you want to bring the fight and the composition the in the direction that you want. That's why when I create fights, at the same time as I create a move, I according the right angle in my opinion at the same time. I try to do these two processes at the same time. And because now I have even if I'm still a young action director, I have enough experience to know the grammar of the composition about the shot, and I know what it can serve you when you create you compose an action, and what it can just affect your attention or not to sell the best way the movement that you want to sell to the people, you know.
Do you want the audience to know exactly what's going on? Do you try and surprise them? Do you try and break expectations somehow when you're designing action?
As long as I can, if it's possible, because you have also to take in consideration all the component that you have, but if the main actor can do action or not. After that, you resolve all that stuff. If I have freedom, all the freedom that I want, I like to create action very clearly and understandable for anyone. Yeah, for me, one of the way to choreograph that I like the most is to create a choreography very clear at the screen. You understand what is going on for everybody. But the way you compose the choreography, I can add a very cool move and a bit complex technical movement in a certain way if you can read that it's a choreography I want. You know what I mean? I don't want you to be able to read at the first time that it's a choreography. It's one of my goals sometimes when I can. And it's not a matter of the style, because you can do this in many styles. As long as you have a special vision and you have some tools to create technical and complex movements, according to the movement of camera, in certain way, you can have a clear action, and also you cannot be able to read that is a choreography. And if you reach that stage, for me, you win.
What films do you think have succeeded in doing that kind of action?
All my action sequences that I doing in my training. You know, no, I think some of in. Maybe some action sequence in Fury. I think I didn't have the opportunity yet to have all freedom to create that kind of choreography. I did many times in my YouTube channel. I did a small fight sequence, which is very clear. But I put so many information at the same time that at the first time, you cannot understand that it's a choreography. You have to watch again to understand what is going on. But when you see everything and you put slow motion, you understand that everything is logical. Everything. And it's one of the goals that I try to reach when I can, when I have the occasion to create an action scene. Until now, I can just add this kind of flavor to the production that I work on. Sure. In a certain limit, you know.
I don't want to jeopardize your career by asking this, but do you find that you tend to apply yourself the most to your own projects because you have maximum freedom there?
Yeah. Now in my position as a second unit director or fight stunt coordinator, I like this position. And as long as I can, if I can serve a scenario, a director who feels some interest to my work, I keep do my best to give the all tools that I can to make the best work. But yes, of course, in the future, if I can make my own action movie, I will try to innovate. Yeah, it's the most important thing. It's to entertain the people. And if you see twice same thing, two times the same thing, you lose the audience.
Sam, are you watching action films? Does anything out there interest you?
Yeah, for me, since a few years, the Japanese industry and Korean is in the place. You know what I mean? I think in this few years, as you said in some interview, I don't remember this one. If there is some production who is enough stronger to take some talent from Japan, make a story who can be read by the Western people and everything, I think it can change or raise the bar to another level again, like we had when we saw Bruce Lee for the first time, when we watch Jackie Chan, and after when we watch Tony Jaa for Ong Bak, and the next step for me after Tony Jaa was The Raid, you know. I think we can have the same step up if we have a movie who are come from that Japanese industry or Korean.
I think that the talent level in Japan, it's I don't know why it's almost like we never hear from them outside of Japan. Even if even though there will be like a really interesting fight scene from Sonomura, for example. So he did Baby Assassins and...
Oh yeah, of course. I watch that movie, and also Hydra, but I watch only fight sequences.
Yeah. I mean, he shot the entire Hydra movie in 5 days. So this is, which is incredible, but that's kind of criminal.
I think you find the right word. It's criminal.
That guy should have 2 months to make his ideal action movie. And then you would see the full power of this battle station, right? That would be the ultimate weapon. And people would suddenly go like, wow, have you seen Japan? And it's like, it kind of takes that sometimes, but the production model there, as you've experienced, you know, the Japanese action, they don't give you much time and they definitely don't give you much money. It's sort of that issue in America. I mean, unless you have hundreds of millions of dollars. So there's got to be another model for this, is all I'm saying. I don't know what that model is exactly. I don't quite know what the answer is right now.
Yeah, the interesting thing, it's a bit a paradox, you know, paradox. You can be so effective, like the director of Baby Assassin, but if you too effective like this, you will teach the some produce production to be effective like this.
Totally.
But the paradox, if you're not effective like this, you cannot bloom and nobody notices you.
Yeah. It's the same thing with, you know, it's the same thing with Kenji. I mean, you know, Kenji Tanigaki's action is it's still great, but he gets less and less time each time.
Yeah.
Well, I see this too sometimes in on American projects where it's almost like they will say, like, hey, they did it in 4 days, we should do it in 3. And it's like, I don't know what this competition is about. Like, why are we competing to do it in less time? Why don't we compete to make a better action scene? That should be the end goal. Because what you're saying about being able to foresee the action scene, maybe that's what you need. You need to be able to see visually in your head when you close your eyes. You need to be able to see camera, edit, the whole vision, and see how awesome that is, and realize that that takes longer, and realize that that's going to take you an extra month, and then fight for that. Don't compete over, hey, I can do it quicker than you. This is like this gung-ho mentality. It's like, no, that's the wrong mentality. So,
I don't know if it's as I told you, it's also a way to be being noticed by some producer, and it's also a way to raise from the mass, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the bad, I don't know if it's a bad side or not, but what it's affect, it's that all the production will know that you can do that. You know?
Yeah, it's dangerous. I mean, it's that way with almost everything. I want to ask too, you know, you've done the Princess Fury series. You've made a leading actress in these films look really good. There's a lot of talk right now about female action stars and female-led action films. What's your thought on, you know, giving authenticity to these female-led action films? What's your approach in general? Or do you just take it on a case-by-case basis?
You mean if it's a female action, what should I do? What I should not do if it was a man like this, something like this?
Is it different to you?
Little bit. I mean, there is some stuff that you cannot apply on a woman if you don't. If you otherwise, you will not match with the, I mean, reality in the fiction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you let a female action fight like a Hulk, it's a bit weird. Except if it's fit with the scenario, you know. My approach with that when I have a female action is to make it everything more sharp, more delicate, more like a feline, you know, like a panther, you know. Add some move like a cat, add some move that it's convenient for a woman with high skill can do. Otherwise it's you feel that it's a bit disagree, you know, you have a too much contrast and it doesn't fit. I think it's more convenient, maybe it will change, but now
when you have such a great performer like Veronica, I wonder sometimes when you were working with her, did you find sometimes that, okay, you're fighting guys that are, you know, twice your size and you're really good, you need to pull it back a little bit so that it's more realistic?
Yeah, of course. It's all it's about the way you approach the sequence. If you have two big guys in front of the woman, even if she can beat them, the first reaction, because you have two different mass, it you have to put some realism, you know, some stuff that it could be transposable in the reality. Maybe instead to use the force to beat them, she can be smarter and use an extinguisher or some stuff like this, you know. Yeah, everything is about the way you approach the sequence and how far you want to be accurate with the story, you know. How you want to get close to the story, I mean.
Yeah, sometimes you'll see bless these guys, these big dudes that are 6'3", 6'4", right? And they've learned to move in the Hong Kong way, right? So they're really fast, they move their head really quickly. Marcos Aurora, for example, he moves like he's 5'6". I'm 5'6". I'm a short guy. I'm 5'7", actually. I got measured yesterday. So that's like 100 and I don't know metric. I'm short. And Marcos Aurora is tall and he moves like me, even better than me. And so, sometimes when you see these big guys fighting little guys like me, well, if I punch him in the face, realistically, it's not really gonna do much. And realistically, I probably shouldn't try and do that. Right? That's too high, right? Whatever it is, right? I should crawl between his legs. But as the performer, if that stuntman is 6'4" and he's trained to just take reactions like a small guy, well, then you're not actually being realistic. Like you said, the mass is not equal. So when I drop kick him, he shouldn't fly back. He should just act like he's bigger than me. Did you
I think,
find
yeah.
yourself, I mean, were there any situations like that where, when you have a smaller, I mean, especially on the princess, right? Because she's fighting guys literally twice her size.
No, it was the same approach because there is a one scene she fight with a very big guy, and she cannot confront him in front. She has to be smart and avoid at the last moment his strike, and maybe yeah, at the end of the sequence she jumped on the wall and on his shoulder, and just move his helmet in order to make him have a little bit disorientation. Because even in the fiction, the audience have to believe what is going on, you
Of
know.
course.
It's easy even in the fiction to disconnect. You have to not fall in that kind of trap, because it's easy to lose the audience.
Very good advice for up and coming filmmakers, especially when, if you're a big guy and your inspiration is from a really small guy, that might not be the right movement language for you. There may be ways to adapt that for your size. Well, Sam, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I love hearing how you think about all of this. I think that, your background is really interesting, and I can't wait to see what you have coming next.
Yeah, we will see. I wish you the best too. I hope you will keep going what you do and make it more and better.
Maybe together, huh?
I hope so, yeah. Yeah, thank you very much.
Action Talks is available on YouTube, iTunes, and Spotify. Join my Telegram at t.me/Eric Jacobus. You can check out my studio at superalloyinteractive.com. My website and blog is at ericjacobus.com, and be sure to subscribe. Thank you.